The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chris Sheridan.
And I'm Jim Poplava.
And today we're going to do a special report titled Coronavirus, the Week That Changed America. Jim, let's talk about what happened specifically last night. It was Sunday evening. The Fed made a massive injection of liquidity into the markets. The markets did not respond favorably, unfortunately, this morning as we're speaking. It's March 16th on Monday. But let's start there. Kick us off with what happened and why the market reacted the way it did.
Well, let's go back just a couple of weeks when the Fed surprised the markets with a 50 basis point cut. Now, the Fed was due to meet the FOMC meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday. Instead of waiting to Tuesday and Wednesday, they cut interest rates by a full percentage point down to 0.25 basis point. They cut the discount rate from 1.75 down to 0.25 point. That was 150 basis points. So, Chris, I think the thing that maybe startled the markets more than anything else was they couldn't even wait to Tuesday or Wednesday, because it was widely expected that this week the Fed will meet tomorrow and they'll end their meeting on Wednesday, that the rate cuts would be seen on Wednesday. Instead, they came in a surprise move on a weekend on a Sunday, which had never happened before. But as I recall going back to, I think it was 1979, when Paul Volcker came back from Europe and there were problems with the dollar, it was called the Saturday Night Massacre. He actually raised the Fed funds rate, I think it was 2 or 3 points, on a weekend. So the fact that it happened on a weekend startled everybody. The thing that we've seen, and it's not just that they cut rates on Sunday, it was what they did last week by injecting $1.5 trillion of liquidity into the market. And let's put that in perspective. If you go back to the financial crisis in 2009, the Fed announced QE1, a $1.2 trillion. That was over a year. Last week, they injected $1.5 trillion in a week. In addition to that, they also announced that, now they're saying that they're not calling this QE, but they said that they are also going to institute a bond buying program, $500 billion in treasuries, $200 billion in mortgage securities. But the thing that makes what happened in the last week extraordinary, it was not just the $1.5 trillion injected into the market. It was the surprise 100 basis point cut on Sunday, though 150 basis point cut in the discount window. That's where banks go when they borrow from the Fed. So clearly the Fed wants the banks to have access to credit if they need it. But also what is happening in certain states. In Michigan, the governor closed down restaurants. On Sunday, the governor of California closed bars, clubs, wineries, ordered all restaurants to 50% capacity, and anyone over age 65, quarantine to your home. Sporting events canceled. I'm a big football fan. XFL football has been canceled. And we've seen all kinds of public events. The CDC is saying you shouldn't be attending any event. We've seen churches cancel, sporting events cancel, bars are closed, clubs are closed, wineries are closed. Chris, this is obviously going to have an impact on the market. And more importantly, we saw the stock market do in 3 weeks that would normally take 3 to 6 months in a bear market.
Yeah, and Jim, I should probably point out that I'm actually talking to you from home. You're at your house. So we're both in two different locations. We're working from home, as is many people in our office, given the recommendation by the Department of Labor to try to minimize contact among employees. So a lot of people doing that. And my understanding, this is going to be the biggest work from home experiment in history that we've ever seen. So it's going to be really fascinating to see if America can pull off this experiment, working from home. You know, can we be productive? Can we still go about our day-to-day lives as we normally do and not see a major crash in the economy? And I think that's the thing that most people are now saying. It looks inevitable that we're going to see a very big hit to the economy with all of these things closing down, as you mentioned. Before we get into what you expect for the market and where we're at, let's talk specifically about how the market reacted just this morning to the Fed, because as you noted, they injected massive amounts of liquidity. They cut the Fed rate, the federal funds rate down to zero. That was something that we had sent out in a market update last week. Our chief investment officer, Chris Poplava, saying that they were likely to do that this week. That ended up playing out, eyes on cue. But the markets opened up heavily down. What does that tell you, and what is your take on the market reaction so far?
You know, I think there's the feeling like the Fed just fired all its bullets. There's nothing left to do. And if you take a look at this, in fact, when they cut interest rates in a surprise move by 50 basis points, I remember calling my son, Chris, and I said, Chris, futures market is down, limit down 5%. And certainly that's what happened the next morning. Last night, Chris, when I was looking at the futures market, all futures markets were limit down 5%. What was surprising, gold was up 3.5%. And as we were speaking, gold is down. I think the feeling is they just fired all their bullets. Like, what's left to do? I think what you're going to see happen, which is you're going to see this week, is a massive stimulus program. I know they had Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin on the talk Sunday talk shows. They were trying to pin him down. What the hell is all this going to cost us? I mean, there's estimates if they go with a cut in payroll withholding, that alone is $800 to $900 billion. And we're not even talking about other things that are going to be added to this package. And Chris, it may not be just one stimulus package. It could be several stimulus packages. Now, let me put this in perspective. Our local newspaper put out an article on Sunday, and they went back to flu epidemics, and probably the biggest one to hit this country was the 1918 flu that killed close to 50 million people. The bounce back in the economy and the markets was within 3 months. So whenever you see widespread panic, as you're seeing in the markets right now, usually on the flip side of it, you can see a V-shape down and a V-shape up. Now, that was something we talked with our technician last week, and he said, you know, whether it's V-shaped or maybe it kind of muddles down, I think that's the big question. But, you know, on this Monday, all of the economic statistics that we've seen come out all the way up to this point, we're looking good. The unemployment numbers, the ISM service sector. Today, on this Monday, we got the New York Empire State Manufacturing Survey come out. It is down to levels we haven't seen since 2009. So just a forewarning, in the next couple months, you are going to see the impact economically that we're seeing as a result of this social distancing. You can't close down restaurants. You can't restrict travel. You can't close down Disneyland, shut down bars, wineries, everything you can think of in the service sector, and don't feel that this is going to impact the economy. It most certainly is. And the New York Empire Index, the first real statistic that we've seen in the month of March, has come out. We're back to levels of 2009.
Yeah, and I was just looking at a chart of the S&P 500 index right now, and it looks like we're down around 27% from the highs that we saw in February. So as we've talked about before, we've definitely seen now an end to the 11-year bull market that started in 2009. That has peaked, and we are now in the midst of a bear market, as usually qualified by a 20% decline from the highs. So now we're around 27%. Question is, how much lower do we have to go? But that brings up the question of, why did the Fed do what they did in such a radical manner? What is it that they're seeing? Why do you think that they cut rates so quickly to zero, launched, as you said, $1.5 trillion of liquidity into the financial system so quickly? This is well above anything we saw in 2008. What is it that they're seeing?
Chris, I think they're trying to stop the contagion from entering the financial system. Right now, this is an economic issue, a supply side issue, a medical issue. It's not a financial issue. The banks are well capitalized. But one thing that is happening, which our chief investment officer, Chris Poplava, will be covering on this week's Big Picture, he's going to be talking about credit spreads. They're still widening. So I think they're trying to stop this from spilling over into the credit markets, because credit spreads are widening, something that we talk about on this program and something we monitor very closely at Financial Sense Wealth Management to give us a gauge, because the credit markets usually have it better and ahead of the stock market. So I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to keep this from hitting the financial sector, because if it does hit the financial sector, we know, for example, there are a lot of bonds coming due. We know, for example, the corporate bond market, half of the bonds are triple B rated, which is only one step above junk bond ratings. So I think they're trying to head off a financial contagion. In other words, spreading over into the financial sector, which is why they are injecting massive amounts of liquidity. And also, you got to remember, too, globally, they got swap arrangements with five of the world's largest central banks. So there could be a dollar shortage. So the Fed, you know, the dollar is the world's reserve currency. And if there's a shortage of dollars, what do you do? And so that's why I think they're preemptively trying to stop this from heading over into the financial sector. And right now, it's hitting the stock market as people press the sell button, panic button. There's no way to avoid that. But eventually, you're getting to something, and we'll get to that shortly. I haven't seen dividend yields like this since 2009 and going back to the early 1980s.
So as you said, one of the key points here is the credit markets. The Fed, they saw the credit markets seizing up. I know there's been reports, this is something we discussed just recently, about some companies that are drawing on their full credit lines just in case they see lending dry up and they can't get access. So that is worst case scenario, is you see this positive feedback loop of fear begetting fear, selling begetting selling, and it just kind of snowballs on itself. You see the snowball effect to the point where all of a sudden banks are not lending, consumers aren't borrowing. And I mean, in 2008, right, if we think back to the financial crisis during that time, the worst case scenario is all of a sudden you're not going to have food on the shelves, not because people are stockpiling, but because companies aren't even able to finance their needs in order to deliver the foods to the shelves, the medicines, all the things that make society run. So that's worst case scenario. The Fed is trying to prevent that, and they're throwing the kitchen sink right now at the stock market to do that.
Yeah, and this relates directly to what you saw last week with the $1.5 trillion injected into the market. The cut in the discount window at the Fed from 1.75% to 0.25%. And this relates to what you just mentioned, Chris. Boeing, all these companies are tapping into their credit lines now. Carnival Cruise Line has done the same. Boeing has done the same. And it's what you're seeing happen in stores. People are stocking up on food and toilet paper. Well, what is the grease and wheels that run corporations? It's the credit markets. Corporations are doing the same thing. They're stocking up on money by tapping into their credit lines, whether they need to or not. They want to make sure if they do need to use that money, because let's say sales dip over the next two quarters, they have access to that money now. They don't want to be going into the market at the last minute, as we saw in 2008. The market seize up and they don't have access to that. So this, I think, is directly related to what the Fed did by lowering the discount rate from 1.75% down to 0.25%, injecting $1.5 trillion and taking rates down to zero. The Fed, clearly, by cutting the discount rate from 1.75% to 0.25%, they're basically saying, banks, if you have people tapping on your door and looking for credit, you have people calling in their credit line, we want to make sure you have the cash and the money to do that.
Jim, let's talk about something that you've raised on the show for many, many years now. And that is the idea where we see this hypersynchronous trading environment where all of these investors are now in with the passive investing bubble, as you've called it. All these investors are investing into ETFs, and then these ETFs buy a basket of stocks, and they're buying the Apples, the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Googles, all the FANG stocks, right? Bidding the valuations of those stocks higher and higher and higher. People aren't really going out and buying them individually. They're buying the ETFs. This created somewhat of a passive investing bubble. And what you said would happen is that when that unwinds, as we have now seen over the past several weeks, you're going to see a massive and very quick sell-off, akin to a flash crash, but it's just going to be the likes of which we haven't seen in some time because of the dynamics at work. If you wouldn't mind, you know, get our listeners up to speed that aren't aware of that argument that you've been making now for many years.
Yeah, this happened, Chris, roughly about 3 years ago. This was back, I think we did a show on this in 2017. And I was looking at some of these FANG stocks, whether it was Amazon, whether it was Google, Mike, whatever it was in technology. And I had to ask myself, who in their right mind was paying 200 times earnings for Amazon? I mean, this harkened back to the tech bubble. And so I went on my Bloomberg and I took a look at the top holdings in the S&P, took a look at the top holdings in the Dow stocks and the NASDAQ. in the top 10 holdings, Chris, of every single one of these stocks were index funds. Didn't matter where I looked, how many companies, I think I drilled it down. I looked at the top 50 holdings in the S&P, looked at all Dow 30 stocks. I actually took a look at the NASDAQ 100. Top holders were indexes. And the thing you have to understand about an index is it's not a fund manager that's sitting there looking at an index and saying, or a stock and saying, you know, this stock has been priced at such a low level that I'm going to go in and pick it up. You know, the Warren Buffetts, the value investors that go in. An index manager doesn't make those kind of decisions. He buys according to index weight. He sells according to the index weight. So one of the questions we started asking ourselves, and as I did more research, is that the indexes are controlled by five large financial entities. In other words, financial wealth is concentrated in five institutions. So, Chris, imagine if you were one of those five institutions. We're all sitting in the same room, and the accounting department comes in, and we're getting massive liquidations. We're all looking at each other. Who are we going to sell to? So that's why you see these steep 10% drops. You blow through bids. Like, let's take a $100 stock. It may be trading on the market at 100. You may have bids or limit orders to buy that stock going all the way down to 90, maybe 85. But below 85, there are no bids. So the stock keeps dropping until somebody finally picks up the phone and says, I'll buy at that level. And that's going to be your active managers. It's not going to be your index funds, because the index funds, if they have liquidations, they sell. They don't make decisions that at this level, I'm going to go in and buy this stock that is paying me a dividend 8 to 10%. We'll get to that in just a moment. That's one of the problems that we saw with indexing, financial concentration. We did a show that when this did unwind, it would be fast and furious. If you think about it, and I think Richard Dixon alluded to this on last week's program, we've done in 3 weeks what normally takes 3 to 6 months.
Right. The prevalence of algorithmic trading, of course, high frequency trading also fits into this. The fact that, you know, I mean, they are so quick to react and trading, I don't know, millions of times a second. It's just insane, right? With the electronic trading, there's now reports coming out that the New York Stock Exchange may close down their floor. That was something I was just reading on the Wall Street Journal. I believe it was last week on Thursday. So they are now testing a backup system that they have in place that would be fully automated, fully electronic, and they would be eliminating almost all human brokers off the floor of the exchange. So we would be basically handing over the reins of the market now to the machines with the coronavirus, which is very fascinating. So like you said, information is just priced into the market so much faster, and hence how you coined it, fast and furious in the markets.
The other thing I want to talk about is what did the Fed do over the weekend? They took interest rates to zero. So we are now back to where we were for 7 years. The Fed kept interest rates at zero. Money market funds were nothing. You got nothing at the bank. You got nothing on CDs. I just read today that 30-year mortgages are down to 3.35. They may even be going lower. I can remember back in 2008 and 2009 getting a 10-year interest-only loan for 2% on a mortgage. And so these are the kind of things you are more likely to see going forward. The real issue that's going to be coming about here with investors, and especially those that rely on income, what are you going to do for income when interest rates are zero? Right now, Chris, I hate to say this, if I was CalPERS, their mandate is they need to earn 7.5% to pay their pension benefits for employees. That's their rate of return. You can get 7.5%, 8%, as much as 10% in dividends of high quality companies right now. So if I was a pension fund that a defined benefit where I have mandatory investment returns that I need to achieve to pay out pension benefits to my beneficiaries, I would be looking at this area, because you're not going to get that in the bond market. In fact, I would go as far as to state at this point, with treasuries as low as they are, they're no longer investments. They're speculation. Who in their right mind would tie up money for 10 years for less than a 1%? They're basically just speculations.
And that's what number of people that we've had on our show have admitted when they're making a call in bonds, is that, you know, they're not looking at it for the yield. Of course, yields are so low. It's not the traditional investment vehicle that bonds have been. They're looking at them purely from the standpoint of capital appreciation, which is typically how you would view a stock, right? So it's now become a speculative investment. And the only reason you would say now at this point to invest in bonds is if you're thinking rates are going to go even lower. I mean, if you thought that they were going to get dragged down into negative territory like we see in Japan and Europe and some other places, I guess that would be the one reason if you think we're going to see more capital appreciation on the upside. But we haven't seen that. We've been seeing liquidations of bonds. We've been seeing liquidations of gold. It just seems like there's selling across the board at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at one point last week, we saw 10-year treasuries get down to 0.3%. And already the yield on treasuries, on 10-year treasuries, has doubled. So if you would have bought when treasuries were yielding 0.3%, you've already lost money.
Yeah. Well, in that case, Jim, let's talk about this inverse relationship that we see right now between the health of the economy and the health of individuals, the health of Americans, the health of everyone around the world, right? Policymakers are having to find this delicate balance between the health of each of those and, unfortunately, saving one requires almost killing the other in the short term.
In the short term, that's exactly it. In order to contain the virus from spreading, you know, just like what's happening in Michigan, what's happening in California, you're seeing it in New York, travel restrictions, you're seeing restaurants, bars, they're asking restaurants to close down, bars are closed down, wineries are closed down, clubs are closed down, Disneyland's closed down, sporting events are closed down. I was talking to a friend yesterday. We watch XFL, and we were watching recorded games because the games that were due to be played this weekend were canceled. So when you're canceling basketball games, football games, sporting, hockey, whatever the sport is, Disneyland, that is going to take a hit on the economy. On the other hand, what you're trying to do is avoid these crowds. And Chris, you know, they're on the Sunday talk shows, they had Dr. Fauci on one of the talk shows. And of course, the president put in a travel ban for England. And he said the one thing they didn't want to see, there was just huge crowds at the airport. And he said, that's the thing you really want to avoid doing. But if you're traveling, you're overseas, and you want to get back home, you know, there's this kind of panic. Oh my God, I may be stuck here. I had a good friend was over the house on Sunday. And he said, you know, I was due to go up to Canada for a business trip. And he said, but, you know, I'm not sure if I go up there, I may end up staying there. And I may not be able to get back if they have travel bans. I had another client who took a vacation in Hawaii, and he was paying $450 for a room because there was nobody there. They upgraded him to a 2,400 square foot penthouse suite. And he said when he was on the beach, instead of thousands of people on the beach, he said they were lucky if they had 50. However, he did say, coming back on the plane from Hawaii, the plane was crowded to the max.
Wow.
Because everybody is afraid if there's travel bans, they're not going to be able to get back to where they need to be. So unfortunately, you have to make a decision as a policymaker. And I'd hate to be in any policymaker's shoes, whether it's the president, a governor, or a mayor of a city. Sometimes you have to make decisions for the best of health reasons that sacrifices the economy. And that's what we're seeing. And that's why we're more than likely to go into a mild recession that could last a couple quarters, depending on how this plays out and how it's contained. But we're moving quickly now by shutting down a lot of things, crowd events, for that safety. But we're making a policy decision. The economy has to take a hit in order to keep people healthy.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, Jim, because I don't know about you, but I've been having a lot of conversations with people, and I'm sure our listeners as well, about what is the appropriate response? Why the quarantines? Are people panicking? Is the government panicking? And, you know, it really comes down to the need to try to, what they say is, lower the curve, right? They're trying to flatten the curve for the number of infections that are spreading because it's so highly transmissible. You have another problem on top of it is that there's a lot of people that are asymptomatic, right? They may have coronavirus, be infecting others, but they're showing no symptoms, which makes it especially hard to try to track and prevent. So the idea is that these quarantines are going to help hopefully flatten the curve, meaning that the rate and number of infections across society through communities will be lowered. And then that means that the hospitals don't get overrun like we see in Italy and like we see in France and like we see, as we saw in China, of course, and other parts of the world. So we don't want to replicate that here. So the hope is by reacting the way we have with these quarantines, we can prevent that, because that's really what quarantines are all about, is trying to lower the number of infections, try to keep as many people from hitting the hospitals all at once and running out of everything from respirators to even important life-saving drugs. That's something that we're going to touch on this week with a guest from FS Insider, and she's going to have some pretty frightening things to say, unfortunately, about that when it comes to our dependence on China for medicines and how this fits into all of this as well.
Chris, you're spot on. In fact, when Dr. Fauci was doing his rounds on the Sunday talk shows, every anchor was trying to pin him down. You know, what's this look like? Well, we know flu season begins at the end of September, and it resembles a sharp, tall, bell-shaped curve. It starts out slow, builds up momentum, and the health officials already said, you're going to see this get worse in the next couple months, because that's the way these things travel. However, he said, on a worst-case basis, if it resembles that bell-shaped curve, that could overwhelm the healthcare system. So what we're trying to do is, by lowering the height of that bell-shaped curve, the existing healthcare system that we have will be better able to handle it. So in California, those most susceptible to this disease, people age 60 and over, the governor has quarantined. If you're 65 and over, you've been quarantined to your home in California. So by taking these steps right now, this is the best way to not get to a worst case situation, as you saw in China, as you're seeing Italy today.
Yeah. And for me, it's also just about using some common sense decency, right? If you had a flu, if you had a bad, let's say it's a bad flu, bad case of the flu, you would obviously not go out and go to a party or go hang out with a bunch of friends while you're contagious and sneezing. And I mean, it would just be common decency to those around you. You would isolate yourself. You'd hopefully be in bed doing whatever you need to do to get better. And then once you recover, you would go out. Now, that's the same case here. It's just scale that up times 100 or 10,000 people, right? It's a large number of people that have a flu-like illness, except this time it's 10 to 25 times more lethal than your normal flu among those who are especially vulnerable. So, you know, it's really about common sense decency and thinking about those who are most vulnerable, because you don't want to inundate the hospital system. So that's why I think it's just important to understand that there is a rightful amount of, I don't want to say rightful amount of panic, but a rightful amount of concern that's being expressed, especially among those who, you know, could be severely impacted by this. So given this and some of the things that we talked about already, Jim, let's talk about the markets and investments. What is your approach? What are you doing right now for clients? How are you approaching the markets in your own portfolio?
Well, Chris, let's talk about the stock market versus mutual funds versus ETFs. If you own a quality company, you've owned it for a while, it's strong. Let's say it's a Dow stock. It's a high quality company, strong balance sheet. They have an economic moat. If you're getting your dividends and you bought that stock for dividends, why would you sell that when interest rates are at zero? So if you own quality companies, just as Richard Dixon said on the show last weekend, I would keep them if you own them. If you don't own some of these stocks, you might want to make out a shopping list. And if you're looking at dividend companies, you know, we do this with our Bloombergs. We look at companies with strong balance sheets. They have lots of cash. We look at their business model. Is their business model subject to cash restraints? In other words, if let's take the cruise ship companies or the airlines. Obviously, if they aren't flying airplanes, if they're not putting 3,000 people on a cruise ship, they're going to get hit. And it's no surprise they're tapping their credit lines right now. So look at what you own. Make sure you own quality. If you own them, keep them. I mean, does it really make sense to sell something that's down 30%, paying you 6, 7, 8% in dividends, has a history of paying dividends every single year, has a history of raising dividends each year? You're going to sell that and go to cash? Then what are you going to do for income? And are you going to be smart enough to get back into the market? Probably not. So if you own quality, keep them. If you own a quality ETF or let's say a mutual fund, at this point, I think one of the things that we're going to see, Chris, and we've already seen it in an unprecedented level, you are going to see oceans of money in the form of monetary and fiscal stimulus. This week, they're probably going to pass a fiscal stimulus that's going to be well over $1 trillion. The Fed added $1.5 trillion to lubricate the financial markets. They are now going to buy $700 billion in bonds. I would not be surprised to see the Fed expand and double its balance sheet. Just like the national debt doubled under Obama, it's going to go up who knows how many trillions under Trump. I would not be surprised. The Fed is already at $5 trillion on its balance sheet. Now, remember, they got up to 4.6 during the financial crisis and quantitative tightening. They took it down to $4 trillion. They're already back at $5 trillion, and we're just getting started here. The only thing I think that's going to matter most is how they structure this fiscal stimulus. For example, they're looking at a payroll tax deduction. The only issue I have with that, Chris, it puts money in the pockets of consumers. But right now, if you're watching TV, do you have this inclination to go out and spend a whole bunch of money? I doubt it. I suspect that if there is a stimulus, it'll probably be saved. That's number one. Number two, for a payroll tax deduction to work, how does that work if you're working in a restaurant, a bar, working at Disneyland or on a cruise ship and you just got laid off? You're not getting a paycheck. So how are you going to get or benefit from a payroll withholding suspension for a year? So they're going to have to take a look at how they address those people that are being temporarily laid off, furloughed, given what's happening in the service sector to contain this virus. So I would say, Chris, this is stimulus round one. This reminds me of President George W. Bush following the events of 9/11 and the recession of 2001. They came up with one fiscal stimulus program, and within 6 months later, they came up with another fiscal stimulus. So if we go into recession, and by summer we're in one, which I suspect highly likely, you're likely to see stimulus two come out in some other form. They're already talking about directing loans to troubled industries, whether it's airlines, cruise ships. And you know, you have to be thinking, as governors are closing down bars, restaurants, these are small business owners that are dependent on their business to live, and also think of the employees that they employ in that restaurant or that bar or at Disneyland. What do you do with those people?
Yeah, and it was interesting because I remember when you were talking to Danielle DiMartino Booth on our program, she was saying that last year, the service sector, the economy, actually accounted for 80% of U.S. GDP. Normally, it's around two-thirds in the 70% range, but 2019 was heavily dominated by the service sector with, like what you're saying, you know, retail sales among restaurants and among clothing stores, travel, all of these different areas that are now being impacted so heavily. So that's why it's very important to keep an eye on what's going on. As you mentioned earlier, definitely having the credit markets on your radar to determine if we're actually seeing a bottom in the markets. Are the credit markets, are the plumbing of the financial system, are we seeing it actually start to get more lubricated to where loans are taking place, credit spreads are narrowing, which is what we have to see? My understanding is we're not quite yet seeing that. So it's a little premature to say, hey, this is the bottom, but this is something that we are going to be tracking and discussing this week with Chris Poplava on our weekend show and our weekend Smart Macro show. So we'll be getting into that. But Jim, if you would mind, let's close things off talking about some of the key steps. And I think this is really important that we go through this in this time of lots of panic and trying to figure out what to do. You've been talking to a large number of doctors, many of whom are clients of Financial Sense Wealth Management, their friends, trying to get a handle on what are the steps that you can take. And I think you narrowed it down to six key little things that people can do. If you wouldn't mind, list those for our audience.
Yeah, I was spent all weekend. I think I must have talked to about six or seven doctors. And you're hearing this from public health officials. When you think about it, when you leave your house, you are touching things. I don't care if you're grabbing your car handle on your car, you're going to the store, putting your hand on a handle to open a door. Everywhere you go, even going to a grocery store, you pick up an item off the shelf, you put it back on, somebody's touched this. And let me just throw this out. For those of you who think that you can avoid all this by shopping online, that package that arrives on your doorstep was put there by a human being. In other words, somebody's hands was on that package. Somebody else's hands were on that package loading it into a truck. So if you get a package from Amazon or any other online delivery, open it up, take out the package, dispose of the, you know, the box in the container, go over to a sink, wash your hands with warm water. Wash your hands and don't touch your face. Number one response that the CDC is recommending. Number one response to the doctors that we had on the show last weekend, from Dr. Boney to Dr. Snyder, is wash your hands, don't touch your face. The second thing you might want to consider, I'm doing this myself, latex gloves. If you don't want to bother, you know, when I go out now, Chris, I have clear latex gloves on. So anything I touch, then when I come home, I just take those gloves off, dispose of them, wash my hands thoroughly. Three, wash, as I mentioned, wash hands on just about everything. I'm washing my hands 6 or 7 times a day because I'll have to go out. I am doing the grocery shopping, doing the things we need to do to protect my wife because she had a heart attack. I don't want her out in public. So I'm going out and doing that. And as the public officials say, avoid large crowds. And the other thing I would probably say, stop hoarding toilet paper. It will not save you if you get the virus. Get antiseptic soap, plenty of soap, spray, latex gloves will probably do more to save you than toilet paper. As I mentioned, I have latex gloves that I wear when I go out. I have an antiseptic spray and a bottle of Purell inside my car. I wash my hands when I come back. I heat all my food. And so these are some simple steps that you can do because it is a respiratory type virus. So touching your face, your nose, your mouth, things like that, I have a greater chance of you yourself becoming infected. So these are very simple things. They may sound simple, but that's what the CDC is recommending. There is a program out on Netflix. It's a 4-part series. It's called Pandemic. And one of the things that you want to be sure, as you pointed out, Chris, this is asymptomatic. So you may not know you have it for the first 5 or 6 days, all the way up to 14 days. So be very conscious of your own health, but do take these precautions. I mean, quite honestly, you wouldn't think of it, but not touching your face and washing your hands may be the basic and most simple thing you can do to prevent getting coronavirus. And of course, avoiding being around people that are sneezing. I was in Costco over the weekend and, you know, we're standing in line and one aisle over, somebody is sneezing and coughing and everybody just kind of looked at this person. It was like they wanted to scatter, like turning the lights on with cockroaches. But do take these simple cautions. We are also going to be having more medical professionals. One of the issues I'm looking into is why a lot of these viruses originate in China, whether it's the corona, H1N1, SARS, MERS, these type of viruses that we've seen every American president face going back to George Bush.
Well, Jim, as you're saying, those are some very key things that we can all do. Wash our hands, don't touch our face, wearing latex gloves, that's a good idea. Maybe you want to have some clear ones so that you're not wearing purple gloves that stand out and make you look embarrassing. But, you know, these are all things that we can do and that can go a long way to preventing the spread of a highly infectious disease. But as you mentioned, and as we discussed in this special report, Coronavirus, the Week That Changed America, so far we have seen massive stimulus coming from the Fed through the form of by lowering rates down to zero, injecting $1.5 trillion of liquidity. And we are now seeing stimulus coming from the U.S. government, from fiscal authorities all around the world. So this is a large wave of stimulus that we're going to see coming at the markets from all forms. And that seems to indicate that once we see a peaking, the total number of coronavirus infections around the world, that this stimulus is likely going to boost asset prices quite significantly. It's, you know, we can't say when that exactly is going to happen, but all strategists are looking at that chart of the total number of infections once we see finally some sign of positivity or a positive trend developing there. So that is going to be a significant turning point that we'll see down the road. It may not be for another quarter or two, though. So that's the one thing we have to keep in mind.
We just want to let our listeners know we are going to be continuing this special report every single week until this thing finally gets to a point where it's contained. and we'll also be covering this in the big picture. We're also going to be having additional medical experts on, other epidemiologists. We're going to have doctors. As I said, I've been speaking with doctors probably for almost the last 2 months. There was a turning point when I spoke with Dr. Boney, spoke with an epidemiologist this weekend. And thanks to the show, I got a contact from an email and I was able to talk to him. You know, I just a comment, Chris, you know, on the latex gloves. This was earlier in the week. I was talking to one of my doctors and she's in the operating room all the time where they wear latex gloves. They have special masks and gowns. And after she's an anesthesiologist, after every operation, they change gowns, masks, in gloves. And so I went online earlier in the week and I was ordering latex gloves. I was looking at black, red, purple. And I thought, well, do I really want to go to Costco with black gloves on? And a friend of mine said, why don't we just get, football helmets on, put them on with visors. But seriously, we would like to hear from you. If there are experts you're aware of that you would like to hear us interview on the show, if there's topics you would like to see covered, email us at Financial Sense, and we would love to include either those individuals in an interview or cover the topics on the air. Just want to let you know, we're here for you guys, and we're going to be here every single week.
And again, if you want to give us a call at Financial Sense Wealth Management about any of the topics, guest suggestions, or the like, you can do so by giving us a call at 888-486-3939. If you have a question about our outlook, what we're doing for clients, or how we can also assist you in your retirement planning or your investment process, feel free to give us a call as well, 888-486-3939. And you can also go to our website, financialsense.com. You can click the Contact Us button and leave a message there, and one of our advisors will be sure to get back to you.
So on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us on the program. Stay safe and have a pleasant week.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.